see little kids peeling peas in the Rajasthan cap, and little Fateh Singh, 3-year-old, peeling peas with his mom for the cooking in the Shah Jahanpur camp. Not one newspaper, not one channel would even mention that the main slogans of the farmers were naming Mr. Ambani and the second richest Indian, Mr. Adani. You know, a lot of these Punjabis and farmers have a Fauji background. They conducted one operation and took out 150 cell towers of Ambani. That was reported in two paragraphs. It was a devastating blow to Jio. You know, oh, incidentally, Mr. Ambani's Jio mobile service was personally advertised by the Prime Minister. We woke up one morning to find Prime Minister's photograph and the Jio ad in one frame on the front page of every newspaper. You know, in Indian law, that is illegal. There is a Emblems and Symbols Act under which you cannot use the photos of the Prime Minister, the President, the thing, to advertise a product unless there is a prior permission from the highest levels. So I responded immediately saying, wonderful, now we can change the national exhortation from Jai Hind to Jio Hind.
You're listening to P. Sainath, Gagging Democracy, India Style. This is Independent Alternative Radio. To get copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org.
Why would they not say a single word about Ambani or Adani in the media? Because Mr. Ambani is the largest owner of corporate media, and that media he does not own, he's the largest advertiser. So you're not going to screw around with him. Nor are you going to screw around with the government advertising, because that is the only source for many hundreds of newspapers in India during the COVID-19 pandemic. And there was one moment of brilliance in the reporting of pandemic in October 2021, when people started reporting the bank bodies piled up on the banks of Ganga, Sarayu, Satlej, etc. When that happened, suddenly cold turkey, it disappeared. It just disappeared. All the reporting disappeared. Because the government pulled government advertising from all the publications. One newspaper group went ahead called Dainik Bhaskar. They continued to report. They were 2 weeks into it. They were raided by every enforcement agency imaginable. So the Enforcement Directorate, the Intelligence Bureau, the Income Tax, the police, the customs, the anybody who, GST guys, everybody was there. To their credit, Dainik Bhaskar went, they took a huge beating and then had to soften down. They had no choice. Ernst & Young calculated India's media entertainment industry value at $28 billion in March this year. Yeah, out of which a gigantic share belong to Mr. Ambani. Now they are going about the listed companies when they're putting up these trades. A single transaction in April added 30% to the value when Mr. Ambani and Reliance, his company, initiated a merger with Disney Hotstar worth $8.5 billion, which gives them 60% of streaming in India. 60% of all streaming in India is now the property of Ambani Disney, which have merged. Now, when you made this added $8.5 billion, it meant that the value of the Indian media industry went to $36 billion, out of which 30-35% is owned by one individual. I don't know, we have to calculate. Mr. Ambani has more TV channels than he knows, than he can name. The media are all sewn up except for the very combative, brave individual journalists. One of the things that was fantastic about the election coverage, where all the media got it wrong, you know who got it right? The cutting edge of Hindi journalism today is appearing in young YouTubers in Uttar Pradesh. No money, no resources, but they did it. And that is one of the they are the throwback to one of the finest traditions of Indian journalism. You fight regardless. Yeah? And they told the truth. They spoke the truth about power. They did not even speak to power. They spoke to people, they spoke the truth about power. Oh, by the way, here's a very funny thing. There's a gigantic Indian website at the cost of 110 crores. That's 1,110 million rupees. Azadi Ka Amrit Mahotsav, where there are no photos of freedom fighters who are alive, but there are 1,000 photos of you know who. The same photo that you get on every COVID vaccination certificate. The same photograph that very possibly soon might be on every bus ticket. Oh, another thing about corporate media, your corporate media in North America. The farmers' protests were also cut badly because Google, Facebook, Twitter, they have admitted as much through whistleblowers and through their own selves in the hearings in US Congress that the largest number of takedowns and suspensions of accounts or killing of accounts, the request came from the government of India under Mr. Narendra Modi. Elon Musk, of course, had to make a great drama of it about how he told the Indian government, this is a very wrong thing. You're harming freedom of expression. But we did it anyway. Because Facebook, for instance, I think the biggest share of revenue from any one country that it draws is India. It's about the money. It's about corporate media. In fact, would you believe it? After a young 18-year-old girl was arrested, Disha Ravi, for her environmentalism and activism, the Delhi police issued a tweet thanking Google and Twitter for helping them in the matter of tracing the toolkit. So then Pari, People's Archive, my website, started growing. It doubled. It trebled. It trebled in because we were covering the farmers' web. Incidentally, we published in 15 languages. So it was delightful to watch retired brigadier generals and retired colonels sitting in Singhu looking at Pari on their cell phones or actually even on laptops or tablets. You'll see we have done stories from the camps. Now, suddenly, our growth stopped. Cold turkey, it fell. What had happened? The government of India, we know, got Google to tweak its algorithm ever so slightly so that searches for farmers' protests fell 60%. So guys, you see how many ways of gagging there are. And then the most important of all of them, big money inequality. In India, in 1991, we did not have a single dollar billionaire. Actually, it took 5-6 years in the new economic policies in the neoliberal path to produce our first billionaire. By 2019, we produced 98. That means we produced new billionaires at the rate of one every 70 days. Okay, 98 across 20. Every 70 days, we minted a new billionaire. We rank number 3 in the Forbes list. Even now, we rank number 3. There were some pretenders earlier like Germany and Russia and all that. I mean, but who takes Russia seriously, right? Russians, damn it. Every 5 years, the Russians send half their billionaires to prison. We send ours to parliament. Mature democracy. Right? So we send ours to parliament. You can see them there. Jindal, the whole works. I mean, I can name 6 of them over there, over in parliament. So anyway, we got rid of all these pretenders. We still have a little matter of China to deal with. The 800-pound gorilla on the list is, of course, the United States. Then comes China. Then comes us. The same country which ranks number 3 in the world in Forbes billionaires list ranks number 132 in the Human Development Index of the United Nations. Ranks 178 out of 180 nations in the Environmental Performance Index devised by Columbia and Yale. Ranks 159 in the World Press Freedom Index out of 180 nations. In the Environmental Performance Index in 22, until somebody botched it up really bad in another country, we actually managed to be 180 out of 180 in 2022. Since then, somebody did worse than us and allowed us to step up two notches in the ladder. We rank 111 out of 121 nations in the Global Hunger Index of IFPRI. And this is at the same time that the Prime Minister is making speeches about how India, he's the Vishwa Guru, remember, right? I call him that. I always address him as the Vishwa Guru. It somehow seems appropriately obnoxious. The Vishwa Guru is telling the world that India will solve the problems of global nutrition security. India leads the world in stunting and wasting. Wasting is by, you know, weight to height. Stunting is height to age group. So that's the wonderful thing, that we are solving the problems of the world but can't seem to shake off these tags ourselves. So the big money inequality, let me show you the kind of inequality. This is on as of July 16, 2024. The cumulative wealth of India's $200 billionaires is $974 billion. The Indian budget expenditure for 2023-24 was 45,562 billion US dollars. That means the cumulative wealth of our billionaires is 1.7 times greater than the entire budget of 1.4 billion human beings. That is 1.7 times Indian budget's expenditure. But the cumulative wealth of 200 individuals is 62 times India's agricultural budget. Talk about farm distress now. 62 times India's agricultural budget, which is 15.62 billion US dollars. You know what 200 or 215 now it is, I think, yesterday? 215 dollar billionaires. I said by 2019 we had accumulated 98. In the next 30 months, we crossed 200. You know when we added our highest number of dollar billionaires? First 12 months of COVID-19. And who were the largest group with the new billionaires? Pharma, health sector. Do you know that when I say Indian billionaires, what do you guys think? You think tech industry, high tech. They're number three. Above them is manufacturing. Above manufacturing is healthcare sector. I never use that word. I call it health cash sector. It's a health cash sector, and they had in 2022 twice the number of dollar billionaires that India's wanted tech industry had. IT had 16, these guys had 22. India's estimated budget, I've already given you. Ambani's personal, one individual, his net worth, 118 billion USD, is 7.5 times the expenditure on agriculture as stated in the budget. One individual. Mind you, for his son's wedding, the Indian Air Force was deployed to take over air traffic control at Jamnagar Airport. And Jamnagar Airport, in 1 week, was declared as an international airport. You know where bloody Jamnagar is? Then, anyway, Mukesh Ambani's net worth is actually in rupees, it's 9.8 trillion Indian rupees. Now, you know, one of the things that I intended to do was to study the promise of capitalism. What does capitalism tell us, guys? It tells us that if you work as hard as Ambani, you can also do it. Now, I've had theoretical problems with that. So, well, the theoretical problem simply is, if hard work makes you a billionaire, every woman in rural India would be a billionaire. And every woman in rural Africa, rural Latin America would be a billionaire if hard work makes you a billionaire. But since they are not, you need to question the validity of that of capitalism's great promise. You work hard, you'll also be a billionaire. I think I work terribly hard. I work 18 hours a day. And I'm nowhere near to being 1/10 of a millionaire. Anyway, never mind. Okay. So this kind of inequality feeds into all those other gaggings. By the way, do you know how many 200 billionaires are in a population of 1.4 billion? They are 0.00001.4% of the population, controlling a wealth equivalent between 1/4 and 1/5 of our gross domestic product, bringing to your mind that whole other meaning of the word gross. Forget the economists. I found that the best description of the mindset of inequality came from a woman I understand who is paralyzed and laid up and is not active anymore, but her Instagram post explained inequality better than the mindset of inequality better than any philosopher or economist I know. And this is what she said. If a monkey hoarded more bananas than it could eat while most other monkeys starved, scientists would study that monkey to figure out what the heck was wrong with it. When humans do it, we put them on the cover of Forbes. All these things feed back into the gagging. The wealth, the inequality. You know what? One of the common techniques, we have imported it from the United States, is the slap strategy. The legal strategy of, you guys know what the slap strategy is? Okay, you don't. SLAP is strategic litigation against public participation. So I intimidate you by putting a $100 million legal suit against you. Just give you an example. Intercept, which has done some of the finest exposes of the New York Times and others when it comes to Gaza and Palestine. Intercept has twice been sued by billionaires. They've won both cases and they are $500,000 poorer. In SLAP strategy, you win the case, you still lose the case. Because we are all small units, small outfits. My friend Paranjoy Guha Takurta has been hit for 100 crores, 50 crores by Ambani, by Adani, all of them. It paralyzes you. And all the time you're running from one court to another. So please, this is just the crudest level at which it feeds in. Then the same 200 guys own your media. They're able to do anything in the law courts. Can I go up against the highest paid lawyers in Asia? You can't. You don't have that capacity. You are gagging through law, gagging through outlaws and violence. You're gagging through corporate media. You're gagging through big money and inequality. And finally, the gagging comes to self-censorship. In 2020, India had fallen to rank 142 in the World Press Freedom Index. The Vishwa Guru was outraged. Of course, there's got to be some fraud, jealousy. These Westerners are all jealous. India is overtaking USA and everybody else. So they're all jealous and they're all conspiring. So the government of India, the senior most officer of government of India, the Union Cabinet Secretary, that is the Badshah of bureaucrats, ordered, you know how important the Union Cabinet Secretary is? Theoretically, he takes his orders only from one man. So the Union Cabinet Secretary ordered the Information Broadcasting Ministry to set up a committee, independent committee, index monitoring cell, to respond to Reporters Sans Frontiers, which runs the World Press Freedom Index. By the way, I'm not obsessed with the world, with Reporters Sans Frontiers and their index either. But when you claim that it's false, why don't you create your own index and see? Now, I'm not impressed with Reporters Sans Frontiers, their performance on index on Gaza and Palestine. I'm not impressed at all what they've done. But the fact is that they put India at that stage at 142. So a big committee was formed, 13-member committee, full of very powerful people. Yours truly was one of only, actually it was only bureaucrats. Then some mischievous bureaucrat, well-meaning mischievous bureaucrat, told them, you know what, if it's going to be a committee dealing with press freedom, it might be an idea to have a journalist or two. So someone said, that's a good idea. And they got in touch with two of us. The other one I will not name, but is a very famous TV anchor, and you can easily figure it out. You know what happened to him? He attended 4 hours or two meetings. Have you guys ever heard of a TV anchor who online remained silent for 5 minutes? He remained silent for 4 hours. He did not say a word in either meeting. At the beginning of the third meeting, he got on to apologize to all of us, saying that his duties were onerous and he could not keep up with this. So I was left as the only journalist in the pot. Then the powers got worried about that. Since they'd lost a heavyweight, they brought on two middleweights, neither of whom any one of us in the journalistic circles had ever heard of before, but were obviously from the Sangh Parivar. Anyway, they also kept quiet. In every meeting, I didn't tell them why, but I was intervening and speaking up loudly, clearly in every meeting because this was COVID, right? It was all online. It was on Zoom. The reason I did that because I was recording every word. And anyway, at the end of it, they sent out a draft report. I protested about everything. And these are very experienced bureaucrats. They don't fight with you. Anything I said, he would turn to his secretary and say, Mr. Sainath has made a very important point. It should be noted. He knew and I knew that what was noted, he had done the dance before and so had I. We knew the steps, right? So anything I said, he said, very important point. I said, this methodological thing is wrong. Very important point. And of course, the draft report came. The notable thing about the draft report was that it never contained the word draft. Which meant that they were going to... Now, how did they intend to get it past me? The first line of the acknowledgement is effusive praise for yours truly. Don't ever say no to applause, okay? They thought that I'll read those lines and I'll let the report go. Can you imagine a 45-page report on press freedom that did not use the word dissent, that did not use the word censorship? 19 words I listed. None of these words appeared in the report, but they did. I wrote an independent note, still trying to get it in rather than confront. No response. I sent the note 3 times. High-powered government committee vanished. I sent it 1 more time. The email ID vanished. And this was about press freedom and freedom of expression. So guys, this is how it all works in. The inequality works in. The power works in. The judiciary works in. The executive works in. These were the 5. Now, the counter to this is, I can give 3 examples, inspiring ones. One, the small level fight back by independent journalists and independent media. I won't exaggerate our power, and they can squash us at any time they choose. They'll screw us up in many different ways, as they screw me up in many different ways, by scaring donors away from my website. Just before COVID and during COVID. 2 great things happened. In 2019, tens of thousands of young, teenaged kids often collected outside the gates of their hundreds of colleges and read out the preamble of the Indian Constitution while opposing the CAA, the Citizenship Act amendment. It was so pleasing. It was so lovely to see teenage kids, some of them my students, I'm very proud to say, all of them reading out the preamble of the Indian Constitution. Justice for all, social, economic, political. I went very often to see, and I would spot my students. And of course, I would tell them, that's lovely, you're reading the preamble. There's a little more stuff in the Constitution that's also interesting, and if you read, which may not be on WhatsApp, you know, maybe you take a look at the Constitution. But anyway, to give them credit, they did something that brought tears to my eyes. It was a signal for me. That was a continuation of the spirit of the freedom struggle.
Dr. Sainath.
You were just listening to P. Sainath, Gagging Democracy, India Style. He spoke in Surrey, British Columbia in early October. P. Sainath is an award-winning journalist who writes about rural India. He's the founding editor of PARI, the People's Archive of Rural India. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent nonprofit in our 39th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Naomi Klein, Chris Hedges, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and Noam Chomsky. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, P. Sainath, Gagging Democracy, India Style, and for Arundhati Roy's latest book on India, The Architecture of Modern Empire, just call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Harendra Mahil. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with sitar virtuoso Sharmista Sen performing Raga Kedara.
This is Kelly from the Peak Publication Society, SFU student-led newspaper. Recently, news organizations have been facing issues sharing news content. All news outlets, including small publications like us, have been affected due to Meta's refusal to comply with the Online News Act and compensate news companies. We have been serving our diverse student community for years and need your support to continue. If you'd like to contribute as a paid writer, illustrator, or photographer, follow us on Instagram at @thepeak@SFU. Keep reading our stories at the-peak.ca. If Meta is listening, we're just a community promoting SFU events. Please don't block us again.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2023, huge wildfires raged in Canada, Greece, and the Amazon. And research shows that human-caused climate change and land use changes significantly increase the odds of these record-setting infernos. According to the first State of Wildfires report, human-caused climate change made last summer's very dry, fire-prone conditions in western Amazonia at least 20 times more likely. Douglas Kelly of the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology is one of the report's lead authors.
Western Amazonia had quite a large drought last year, and that caused a lot more fires in the rainforest.
In Canada, human influences roughly tripled the chances of the hot, dry conditions that contributed to extreme fires there. And the risk of extreme wildfires will grow as global warming continues.
So for Canada, for example, what we're showing there is if someone was born at the start of last century, in 1900, they would have had a 12% chance of seeing a fire like we saw in 2023 within their lifetime.
That number jumps to about 50% or more for someone born there today, if the world does not do more to reduce carbon pollution. But Kelly says more ambitious climate action can help limit that future risk. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.